What's up? This is PR, and you're now listening to Respect the Game, the Slam podcast on Winner's Circle Media.
What's good, world? It's your boy, Pete Walsh. My levels are good, a.k.a. Satnam Singh, Sunroof. I'm here with my guys, Abe Schwadron.
Yeah, a.k.a. Alfred Payton's barber.
And Adam Figman.
A.k.a. Kenny Anderson's social media manager.
And we're back.
What's up?
Respect the Game.
What is up?
It's good to be back.
Very special episode today. We got Uncle Cliff Robinson coming on later, a.k.a. Uncle Spliffy, to talk about everything he's got going on.
Yes.
We're looking forward to that. He's the man, plain and simple. Played the NBA for a long time.
Yeah.
Long time. 18 years. You know, I was doing my Googles recently. Mm. Unfortunately, had to fact check for that.
Yeah, I was saying, not as long as you thought, breaking our first rule.
Yeah. So we'll get to that later. But, you know, on to more important matters. You know, Abe and Adam were both in Toronto for All-Star Weekend. So, you know, this will kind of be the official All-Star recap closeout while we could still do all that. So, you know, fellas, first and most importantly, you know, how the hell was Sting?
Oh, my God. Honestly, it was worse than expected. So much worse than expected. Especially when you got Drake literally standing
there
between 12 and 18 feet away, just like looking at his phone and not really talking to anyone. At least that was like the vantage point that we had. And it's like, God, can we just end this early and someone hand him a microphone? God damn.
So did he do a message in a bottle? Or
you know you're not getting a real answer here.
I mean, if you missed it, you consider yourself lucky.
You know what was amazing, though? We posted on Twitter with the question that we asked here last time, which was, can Sting name more NBA players, or can more NBA players name one Sting song?
Mm-hmm.
And we got a great, like, 50-50 response.
Yeah, the funny thing is, no matter how you answer that, you're, you know, shitting on Sting, which is great.
Yeah.
All right, so
got that out of the way early, thank God.
Wait, so did Drake kind of get, like, sunned by the NBA this weekend? He didn't perform at halftime.
It was strange. Like, the intros that he was supposed to do were just like, hello, I'm Drake. And then he dapped up like 70% of the starting lineup.
That's so odd. You think he'd be out in the forefront? I wonder if
he was very around, though. I mean, he was courtside at everything. He coached to the celebrity game. I didn't watch the celebrity game, but he was like, you know, the star of it, quote unquote. I think he was pretty around, all things considered.
Yeah. Did you guys get enough Kevin Hart in your life?
There's a lot of Kevin Hart.
Too much Kevin Hart, if you ask me.
I don't know, man.
Wait,
I
gotta talk about
that
shootout, though.
Yeah, like, kind of respect that.
Yo, he dead seriously tied Draymond Green in a 3-point contest.
I know.
And then Foot Locker tried to act like it didn't happen.
I know. So what was the response in the media section? I know you guys were definitely all over it.
Absolute confusion. Yeah.
I'm sure Ben Osborne nearly had an aneurysm.
Nah, he nearly had an aneurysm from all the, like, giant mascots on the court throughout the weekend.
There's a lot of mascots going on.
God.
That stuffed the Magic Dragon, right?
Shouts to him, man.
A lot of stuff.
Really the star, the mascot star of the weekend, the Magic mascot.
All right. So everybody saw what happened on court, but, you know, I want to hear what happened off court and behind the scenes. So what was the best? Who was the star of All-Star Weekend who, you know, wasn't involved in the game per se, may or may not play in the NBA, but, you know, who was out there really working the circuit and shaking hands and kissing babies?
I mean, all right. I mean, we can answer this, but just before we even answer that, I think the thing you have to understand about All-Star Weekend is, like, things that would normally be
it's just
extraordinary
become
very ordinary. Like, you know, If you're just in a hotel in New York and you happen to ride the elevator with an NBA player, that would be like the craziest shit that would happen to you all week. But at All-Star Weekend, that's like a normal, that's like happens four times a day just because of the amount of people that are packed into a downtown area in the same hotels, you know, going to the same events, the same parties, the same, you know, NBA stuff. So,
yeah,
I mean, that's
it's
number
just
one.
Sightings mostly.
Yeah.
It's sightings and then the occasional weird act of randomness, both of which I think we have here.
Yes.
Or at least I do.
We have all of, go ahead. I'm
all right,
start
so you can play. You're really,
all right, sighting. Here's a great sighting.
Yeah, please,
we went to the Stance party, which was a boatload of fun.
Yeah, and shout out to Stance for pretty much at this point always having the most
great event. Yeah,
listen, the most star-studded party.
This is the
party.
One chance you're getting to name drop. So
we're going
go crazy.
To. Don't worry.
Well,
here we go.
Have a weird one. James Dolan was at the Stance party
with a kazoo, with or without kazoo.
There was no kazoo visibly present. I don't know. So. The question is, what is James Dolan doing? James Dolan's a billionaire, right? Or at least like millionaire many times over.
What he physically was doing was basically staring at Carmelo Anthony's spades game that was ongoing. It was a spades tournament. So.
Yeah, so the Stance party every year is a spades tournament, and it's like there's just a bunch of tables with people playing spades, and then everyone that's not playing spades, which is like half the people, are kind of just walking around roaming. Mm-hmm. And halfway through the tournament, James Dolan shows up. And behind him is, like, this massive dude who I'm sure was some kind of security.
Irving Azoff?
No, did not spot Irving.
But this is also one of those situations where, like, every person you see, you're like, wait, is that James? Like, because this is happening left and right. You're like, oh, look, it's Chris Paul, it's Melo, it's Gallinari,
right.
It's Drummond,
so,
it's whoever.
So James Dolan shows up. He immediately, my eyes couldn't get away from him as much as I, as many celebrities. I was just fascinated, like, if you're a billionaire, why would you go to a crowded party? At some club or whatever. Like,
yeah.
Why wouldn't you just buy a club and throw a party like on the spot or something?
He's a man of the people, man.
It was just a weird look. And then he goes to the bathroom and he comes out. Not that I know this, but he really beelines for the bathroom. When
Adam followed him to the bathroom, I think. That's the point of the story.
Yeah, because I was ready to throw hands with him for ruining my childhood. That thought goes through your mind when you see James out. Like, do I have to fight him now?
Who's gonna choke this guy out once and for all?
No, he seemed like a perfectly nice dude for what it's worth. And then he goes and he stands like behind Melo, who's playing spades, who I think was maybe playing. It was him and someone that I didn't recognize against, I think, Chris Paul and someone else.
Mm-hmm.
And James Dolan is just kind of standing there, or I don't know if Chris Paul was involved in that game, but he was around. But Melo's playing spades, and Dolan is standing like 4 to 6 feet behind him.
Just lurking. Yeah.
It's like you ever go somewhere with one friend to a party and then that friend knows a lot of people, so they're out like talking to everyone and you don't know anyone, so
you
just stand there.
10 years of my life, yes.
Yeah. So
every party I go to.
Right, so your friend just goes off and has fun and you kind of just stand there like, all right, well, here I am at this party by myself now. That's what the owner of the New York Knicks was doing.
Facts. Well, wait, were people actively avoiding him or did no one recognize him? Or was it just
was
like common
cut? He was kind of in the cut. Like, I don't. And there were so many celebrities in this room, which is a credit to, you know, Stance for doing a good job getting people out. But there were NBA players all over the place and you know, it was a pretty star-studded event. And Dolan was just in the cut chilling. And I think he looked pretty uncomfortable. And then he bailed like, he wasn't there for more than 15, 20 minutes, but it was the weirdest sighting in my mind because it's like,
well, did the rest of the
James
room
Dolan,
notice?
Why?
And they were just like, why is a billionaire?
Well, I mean, yeah, but if they did, they acted like they didn't.
Keep in mind that, you know, there's many other people in the room that are much more sort of like iconic to NBA All-Star Weekend. James Dolan just looks like a regular schmo unless you know what you're looking at. I mean, look, the biggest celebrity who was there from a basketball standpoint was Allen Iverson, who got a crazy amount of attention the entire time
Chris Paul,
from
Melo,
everyone. No, but I'm just saying, Wade. From those guys, even, you know, even the top NBA All-Stars that were there,
everyone shows
were
eternal,
showing mad love
respect.
To Iverson.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All-Star Weekend's great because it's the randomness of it all. Like, I guess I'm going to go into my other
story. Well, it's just
here.
That, but I mean, just to finish off the Stance thought, it's just like, it's just so dope when, like, for us, seeing Iverson, period, is cool, but it's even crazier to see Iverson walk into a room and then give, like, he's giving, like, bear hugs to Dwayne Wade, Melo, CP3. Like, you can tell it's just a weird thing to you know, you see it on TV, like, they dap each other up before a game or whatever, but this was a completely behind-the-scenes thing where you just really see the level of respect between these guys and a guy like Iverson. So it was a cool moment, basically, for anyone there who's in the right age demographic.
Yeah, totally.
But yes, please hit us with the other random story, which also kind of encapsulates like what All-Star Weekend
right. I think
is
it's
about.
The perfect All-Star Weekend story because it's random as hell and it was just strange. So at the games, you know how they usually do media dining?
Yes.
For most of these kind of events, there was no media dining this year. They give you a $24 voucher.
Oh, that's actually kind of fire.
And you just use it at the concession stand.
It's way more fire.
Oh,
actually.
But you have to use it in
the
one
whole thing.
You have to use all $24 in one sort of shot. First night, I hit that $24 exact, boy.
$24 on the
exact.
Dot.
Did I have to add some weird Canadian candies at the very end?
I'm not sure if that's impressive or like really depressing, but
it's
kind of
gross,
it.
Honestly. Yeah, I felt sick after eating
But basically, they're like, you have to use the whole thing. So you have to walk to the concession stand and spend $24. And actually, credit to Air Canada Center, the food was not that expensive. So $24 was a shitload of food.
But what is that in American dollars? I'm so confused about the Canadian American dollar. If someone could please explain that.
We didn't split because it only lasts for one night. You can't like save a coupon or anything. You have to use it.
Not gonna make multiple trips to the
So for starters, I was really hungry, so I was gonna order a lot of food anyway. Secondly, I gotta order $24 worth. So I get
thirdly, you considered getting a nice alcoholic beverage, I'm sure.
It didn't happen though. I just went straight food. We stole drinks from like some little machine somewhere, and then
it's not stealing. They're for the media, bruh.
Okay, whatever.
Wait, they were giving out beers in the media?
No. It's just like you got a $24 voucher. Yeah. You could just go for two beers if you want to just knock that out.
You could. So I get, and these are huge slices of pizza, and I get a slice of pizza with like all sorts of sausage and peppers and meat and stuff on it, and another one with pepperoni. And then I get a jumbo hot dog. Ugh. Then I get a massive Kit Kat bar, which is apparently a thing.
For people
in
who have never seen what Adam looks like, that's like probably weighed
more
than
for
he
a
does.
Week, man.
Yeah, like it's true. Just look like a savage.
So then I have all of this disgusting amount of food in front of me, and I hear this voice behind me just go, "Yeah," like kind of shaming me for having all this food. And I turn around, and it's Tyron Lue. The Cavaliers coach.
I can confirm this.
Right? And first of all, he's wearing like an overcoat. So that's like.
He's got a beanie on.
He's got a beanie down to his eyes and an overcoat covering basically up to his chin. So you can't. There's not a lot to work with as far as like figuring out who it is. It was kind of I was like, wait, is that.
Was it that cold in the Air Canada?
Yes.
That
cold? Yeah, first of all,
everywhere.
It was that cold everywhere.
Yeah, it was
like
freezing.
Just leaving the door open to
secondly,
the elements. Yeah,
you see Tyron Lue at a concession stand. This guy's the coach of the Eastern Conference All Stars and the Cavaliers.
Dog, he's gonna spend that $24 too.
No, that was just the media that got those. Your first thought is not like, oh yeah, of course Tyron Lue is at the concession stand or whatever.
Oh,
so he just
why the hell is
so
Tyron
I look at
Lue?
I look at him while he's yelling yeah at me, and he doesn't stop doing it. He just keeps going, yeah, yeah. And it's like coming from like the pit of his stomach. I don't want
to. This is on Friday night, obviously.
Yeah, it would be slanderous to say that he was drunk, right. But he was acting the way someone would maybe act if they had a few alcoholic beverages.
So did you take a bite of your giant Kit Kat bar and step over him on
no,
the way
you
out?
You know what I did instead? No, you know what I actually did? I said nothing and walked away because I was so weirded out. But what I should have said was, Tyron Lue, stop bullying me, fam. It's like, you know, on Twitter when like someone posts a photo of their plate and they're like, yo, I threw down in the kitchen tonight. And it's
struggle,
like,
please.
And it's like a disgusting photo. And then someone else retweets it like, don't tell me you're about to eat that. And then that tweet gets like 600,000 retweets. Like Tyron Lue did that to me in real life. Anyway, yeah, it just encapsulates like the randomness of what All-Star Weekend really is.
So what were
speaking
the...
Speaking of food and celebrity sightings, the capper to the whole weekend was spotting Guy Fieri on the court after the All-Star game, like taking pictures with Future and Two Chainz.
Yeah, yeah.
And like Andre Drummond and...
I think Kevin
that
Durant.
Was amazing.
Yeah,
shout
out Guy Fieri.
Guy Fieri, legend of some of our favorite memes, just right there in the flesh with Two Chainz.
So player-wise, what guys were rolling together the most to either to events or parties or you know, to the concession stand or what have you? Who was spotted, who was inseparable and spotted together the most?
I mean, our favorite of the guys who were inseparable was 3/5 of the Orlando Magic starting lineup, basically.
Yeah.
Who?
Or 4/5
4/5
at this point, you know, being that they unloaded
Aaron
Tobias
Gordon.
Harris. Aaron Gordon, Elfrid Payton, Victor Oladipo, and then Hezonja were just...
You could just tell they were boys, and it was like,
yeah.
This team's probably going to win the championship this year because of how cool they look. Like, they shot... If they make the playoffs, I would not want to face them.
Like, those four just seem like the coolest... like squad to just go out on the town with. That's just the vibe.
It's like they're young, they're up and coming, they're having fun.
They all like each other clearly.
Yeah.
Probably their first, because I don't remember seeing them that at
last year
in New York.
Well, Oladipo was around from being the slam dunk.
True, but Aaron Gordon definitely was not because he was hurt.
Right.
Anyway, so.
Anyway, those dudes just looked like they were just drinking it all in. They were
drinking it all in, huh? And
did not mean it like that, but won't say it wasn't.
And coincidentally, Tobias Harris traded a mere days later. So coincidence or just, you know, time for him to go?
I don't know. It certainly showed that he wasn't super close with everyone, right? If he wasn't rolling with them, then All-Star Weekend, which is like the ultimate time to roll with your friends. Presumably.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, some guys like to avoid the whole shenanigans of All-Star Weekend.
So
we don't know exactly what was going through his mind for not being there. Also, it was, you know, every single person freezing their nuts off in Toronto.
Yeah,
good lord.
If you, I don't hate on anyone that just went to like.
What
Miami
if you just went to the
weekend?
Bahamas for the weekend, like in a nice long extended weekend?
Yeah.
The other thing that's kind of crazy about All-Star is just the sheer amount of media that is everywhere these guys go. And I always think, like, if you're a player, like, it must be just, like, you go through the whole normal season of shoot around, practice, post-game, pre-game, you're talking all the time. And then you get to All-Star.
It's like that on steroids.
It's just absurd. Like, the scrums for these guys. The best example of this I can give is that on Friday during the normal All-Star media availability, they set out sort of the placards for each player, so you know where each player is going to be. So if you're from the local team or you have a certain guy that you want to speak with, you can kind of go post up, set up in front of that guy. So Kobe's placard, obviously, I got the media. I'm not exaggerating when I say there's probably 100 people, like half an hour before Kobe is anywhere to be found. There's probably over 100 people set up in front of Kobe's placard, okay? Probably like 15 to 20 cameras and then assorted other people. It's just mopped, absolutely mopped. I happened to be down at the other end, sort of scoping out like what was going on with Steph Curry and some other guys from the West. Kobe walks out. He like sort of sees just like an empty podium that doesn't have any placard on it. And he just sort of starts like wandering towards it. And a few people noticed that Kobe was in the room. So they started like following Kobe because everyone just freaking follows Kobe everywhere he goes with their Snapchat or whatever. And he just sits down, and like, all of a sudden I look down to the other end. All 150 media members, whatever, start stampeding down from like the west end of the ballroom to the east end. It was the craziest scene I've ever seen. You can go on Slam's Facebook page to see like a little video of this. Everyone comes over and Kobe's just like smiling. And then like after 30 seconds of beginning to answer questions, someone sort of from the NBA like taps him on the shoulder and is like, "No, actually, you're down there." Now that whole mob turns and runs down the other end of the ballroom. It was craziness. It was absolute craziness. Like, when he first sat down, I looked over at the mob that was running. It was like a scene from 300, like, when
the
you
media
see,
edition.
Yeah, like, it was just absurd. Like, the Kobe coverage this weekend was completely out of control.
Yeah, I mean, unsurprisingly. Yeah.
Unsurprisingly, but yeah. Still, like, just to see it in the flesh was
it's too much.
Crazy.
It's too much. They gotta regulate that somehow, I feel like.
Well, for these big events, I mean, just so much international media flies
that's
in.
That's the thing,
that,
yeah.
That's where, like, you know, there's so much interest in him. Another thing about All-Star is that it's, like, you know how they call the Super Bowl, like, the brand ball these days, where it's just every single brand is there doing activations and commercials and all that. It's like that for the basketball world is All-Star Weekend. And which is cool, whatever. Some people aren't there for the actual basketball things or whatever. But, you know, people will go to these parties and stuff. And a lot of people, they have no desire to go to the Friday night, you know, the rookie game Friday night, the Saturday night dunk contest, whatever, Sunday night, whatever. You know, a lot of times I think people will have the opportunity to maybe hit the NBA events, the official stuff. But instead they'll be like, I'm going to stay home and get ready for the party or go to some industry party or whatever. Which is cool, do you, whatever. But there must be at least a very large handful of people who had an opportunity to go to the dunk contest Saturday night and were like, I'm going to not go because I'm going to stay and, you know, get ready for this industry party Saturday night where it'll seem really cool if I'm there on Instagram and kind of like, you know, be a part of the scene. And if you made that decision, you played yourself.
Probably felt pretty damn congratulations. Stupid watching it on television.
Yeah. Because that was,
that was the best part of the weekend.
The dunk contest was unbelievable.
Go ahead.
It was good. No, I just, I'm done.
Elaborate.
That's my whole opinion.
I mean,
that's my hot take.
Pete, I don't know what you thought, how it came off on TV or whatever.
That
but
arena was nuts.
Being in the arena, it was craziness. And to me, as a viewer, I mean, I think it was the best dunk contest of all time. I don't know what you guys think. Just, I mean, and that should seem obvious because athleticism progresses, you know. What did you say? Like, the world's population progresses every year, a couple podcasts ago.
Yeah, and Cobb's Chris has Porzingis jerseys off-rim.
That actually applies here because I think just, people are progressing and dunking is progressing. And
right.
But I thought that was the greatest dunk contest ever.
Okay. Really
why good. Am I wrong? Tell me I'm wrong.
You're not wrong. I agree with you. My whole thing is, can we?
He was like, relax, bro.
I agree. It was amazing. My only gripes are, one, do they have to say the dunk contest is back like every other year?
Right.
Two.
Correct.
Two, when are we going to get some new judges in there?
Well, my God. Okay. Don't give me.
On your first point.
Yo, so agree.
Quickly on his first point. I don't think the dunk contest is back because it's not.
It's
not
never,
that it's back, it's better than it's ever been. That's not like reestablishing itself. It's a whole new frontier now.
Okay. And I right? like the day on that Friday on NBA TV, they had the whole marathon of the dunk contest, which is what they do every year.
Which, in my opinion, is kind of low key boring to watch.
It's terrible. I watched it. There are so many bad ones.
That's because, like, that's because, like, 04 to last year was trash.
No, but even the ones in the eight, like, you remember, like, Brett Barry's dunk was like, so,
well, that was kind of fire because he was wearing the warm-up jacket while doing it.
Yeah,
exactly.
But
that's the stuff that made those dunks fire, was like a dude wearing a jacket.
Sneakers.
What does that say?
Yeah, sneakers, apparel, and the reactions from people on the sideline and the massive camcorder Shaq was holding. Were the highlights of those until like Vince Carter and like maybe, and obviously like Jordan Dominique like in the late 80s, but a majority of them were so bad.
Right. The only thing that those had on it was that the people involved were the superstars of the NBA.
But not always. Like,
no, not
Terrence
always.
Terrence Stansberry.
No, no, no. I'm
and
just comparing this year's like to like Neek versus MJ or Vince Carter or whatever. Like, you could say that those were better dunk contests because those were the league's superstars.
But Spud
and that's
Webb,
the reason that people are going to say that is the best dunk contest and not this year's, because they're just going to point to the names.
Right. Well, that's an undeniable advantage of those. But these were undeniably better dunks.
But who's to say that we look back 10 years from now and Aaron Gordon and Zach LaVine are multiple time All Stars?
Possible,
you know.
But also, MJ and Neek were established when it. Kobe.
Okay. Kobe was not.
Kobe was young.
He was second year in the league.
It's true.
Yeah.
You know, he wasn't even starting.
Vince was though.
Yes, Vince for sure. But I mean, then you go down the line. It's like Andre Iguodala wasn't
like
at that point yet. Jason Richardson wasn't at that point yet. That,
right.
Like that was it was a coming out party for a lot of guys.
Well, because
as well.
Because it was pre his career taking off. I feel like the Kobe dunk contest, like the notch on his resume, is so overlooked. Nobody's like Kobe. I mean, he's done so much. So why would you say that? But nobody talks about the fact that this dude won two dunk contests.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And fire Adidas as well. So.
Can we talk about the judges?
Hold on, just a quick, let's do the judges, but just a quick aside, because Pete said 10 years from now we'll look back. I just laugh at the fact that 10 years from now we're going to look back and be like, oh man, you know, great, what a, you know, historic dunk contest. Look at this photo of a green mascot on a hoverboard. It's going to be hilarious. Our kids are going to be like, what the hell is this?
Yo,
like,
shout out to Stuff for having the illest timing of all time. Like that one when he was spinning and Aaron Gordon caught it. Basically did a 180 and then windmilled it. Like the timing on that was impeccable.
Yeah,
like he spun it the exact perfect time.
Also, I emailed Magic PR and asked if we could get an interview with Stuff or the human that is inside Stuff. And I got a dead serious response that said, "I'm sorry, Stuff doesn't do interviews," which is the best email I've gotten all week. Second only to, "I'm sorry, but Sting is unavailable to talk to you." So that's two crucial rejections that came in the past week and a half. It's been a rough week.
They weren't. I'm gonna guess they weren't the only rejections you got at All Star Weekend. But
hey, yo.
Let me chill.
Wow, that was uncalled for.
One other thing I was gonna say. One other thing I was gonna say is that
I'm about to turn your mic off for that.
We failed to mention
the my
first. We failed to mention the very first NBA celebrity sighting when we hit the ground in Toronto because it became relevant during the slam dunk contest, which is Andre Miller. Andre Miller was the first celebrity sighting.
Before we left the airport.
Me and Adam said, what is he doing in Toronto? Like, huh? And then he pops up in the slam dunk.
And he came with all his gear. Like, okay, he came ready to go.
He came with all his gear. Yeah, meanwhile,
right. Alfred.
Meanwhile, Alfred Payton
was wearing, like,
walks out of the crowd with, like,
straight designer.
Designer jeans. It looked like it was kind of hard for him to walk around. Like,
but he still threw a fire pass.
He just nonchalantly threw a perfect pass off the side of the backboard.
If that's not, like, proof that he's going to have a great career.
Exactly. There were so many, like, the dunk contest, of course, is amazing, like the dunkers themselves, but there were so many little intricate things that made it that much better. Like, everything went perfectly.
Was that Alfred Payton pass in what he was wearing better than the Jordan Kilgannon dunk while wearing jeans that happened on Sunday?
You may have to put some people onto who Jordan Kilgannon
is. I mean, if you don't know what I'm talking about.
I know what you're talking about.
Do your Googles.
Yeah. I don't know.
This dude just, like, basically walked out of the stands. Now, he is a pro dunker, but he was wearing jeans and he threw down a ridiculous dunk, pretty similar to some of the stuff that Aaron Gordon was doing.
I tweeted this, but we need a dunk contest guy to throw down a dunk wearing Tim's.
Oh, fact. I think that we need a player to play an entire game in Tim's.
Looking at you, Nick Young.
Just be dressed up, like, ready to go out right after, because they're all going out anyway.
Looking at someone on a 10-day contract on their ninth day to come out in Tim's in a do-rag and play an entire game.
So what were we talking about, the dunk contest? The judges.
Jesus Christ.
Oh, man, it's like, I was tweeting about this on Saturday night angrily from the stands before the whole event got popping, and who cares anymore. But, like, why can't we both, you can both, like, respect the game and the history of the game and the legends of the game and have utmost respect for these guys, but why do those guys have to be the guys judging a dunk contest?
Name one great Magic Johnson dunk.
That's what I'm saying.
Name,
like,
one person who watches the dunk contest,
honestly,
because they care who's
even Shaq
judging it.
Has no grounds to be judging great dunks.
It won't
dunks.
Affect ratings at all if the judges were Desmond Mason, Jason Richardson, Spud Webb, just guys who have won dunk contests.
Which it 100%.
Like, and it could be active players.
Make
I think
Drake
it could be
a judge.
DeMar DeRozan. Like,
how about Drake?
I guess DeMar
future
would be 2 Chainz.
2 Chainz is sitting right there.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, when Dr. Dre used
Cam Newton,
Dr. J, used to do it, like, that was fire because, like, he totally has clout when it comes to judging a dunk. Like,
yeah,
100%.
I don't know.
That's, I'm fine with that, but why is
wait, I care more about it? Like, the age of these people. It just I have the utmost respect for every guy that was on that panel, but I'm wondering if these guys can even, like, see what's going on, really have, like, great vision, period. And like, to even see the dunk.
See it from my third eye. not only that, how many times have they watched the Magic and or Timberwolves play this year?
Also true.
Slim to none.
How many times has Shaq used, like, the tablet that he had to use to input the score? Also, I don't get that at all.
You guys obviously weren't listening to the broadcast, but after Will Barton did his, like, 180 between the legs dunk, Kenny Smith and Reggie Miller were discussing it, and they both agreed that they could see a player doing that dunk in game, hence why he got a 44. And I was like,
"Yo, I was a little bit,
I was like,
I was
am
a
I
bit,
on drugs right
I was a little
now?"
Riled up by his low score on that one. I thought that was a great dunk. He
dude,
came out
that was
an unbelievable.
And he got totally disrespected on that. I mean, not to say that
for
he
sure.
wouldn't even come close to winning, but he should have at least
exactly
got a 48 on that. Like, he
I mean,
did
he wasn't
his first
going anywhere in that contest, but that was
no.
an amazing dunk.
And he's just an ill human being in general, so he totally should have been put forward.
Also, watching people dunk
champ.
Is so fun. Why can't we have 8, 12,
this is what I said last 2 weeks ago or whatever.
In the dunk contest.
Yeah.
Just make it twice as long. Who cares? It's fun as hell.
You can't tell me that if the NBA just widely put out a survey of, hey, would you like to be in the dunk contest? There's no way they're only getting 4 responses from the entire league. There's young guys in the league
and
that would
want
to
Aaron
be
Gordon.
In it.
No one thought he would be decent. Everyone thought that Zach LaVine was running away with this and it was going to be terrible.
Exactly.
And Aaron Gordon comes out of nowhere and has arguably one of the best dunk contests ever. I guess that's not
and
arguable.
Possibly the best
dunk ever.
Ever.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
And that came out of nowhere.
I was at the gym last night, and I was just trying to
do that?
No, I was just trying to, literally all I was trying to do was
Same.
Jump up in the air.
Dude, make
and
a layup first.
I was just trying to jump up in the air and move the ball from my right hand to my left hand under myself, and that was proving
God,
to be
I
near
really
impossible.
I need a video of that.
Peep my Snapchats, huh?
No. Oh, no.
I will not do that.
pass.
Hard pass.
So the game itself.
That being said, hold on. Let's stop right there, though. I didn't mean to bring this up, but.
Yo, but did you have fun in All-Star Weekend?
Why not? Why don't we just give them their phones during the actual All-Star game? Like,
right.
why don't we just give Draymond Green his phone at the end of the bench? He'll be Snapchatting and tweeting and probably texting some girls in the crowd, but that's fine as long as he's on his Snapchat game. Or give him the NBA Snapchat.
Well, then
like,
it's a matter of time.
No one's playing any D anyway.
Someone sneaks it onto the court and like snaps while they're waiting.
That's
for a
also
free throw,
fine,
which
with
I think
me.
Is fine too. Yeah, I'm not mad at that.
I'm just saying
it's an entertaining
NBA
product,
if you're listening.
Yeah, you know it should be as entertaining as possible.
Exactly,
I agree. So
especially since Toronto's, you know, arena was having such a hard time letting media get on the court. Just let the players do it themselves.
Around, what do you mean? Somebody who's
very,
usually very stringent
policies up there.
Really?
Yeah, everyone stepped. Yeah. You know how usually you can kind of hang around the court before the game up until basically it starts or pretty close to it until when they clear the area? They cleared the area 2 hours before.
What?
Yeah.
With no players on the court?
With no players on the court.
Why?
Strange.
I got nothing for you.
Damn. Oh,
so we just went and used our $24 after that.
Got yelled at by Tyronn Lue.
Maybe a better outcome.
My feelings weren't hurt enough by security that Tyronn Lue has to come yell.
Yeah, so we're getting booted from the studio, basically. So we got our man Uncle Spliffy coming up. And, you know, for those who don't know, 18-year veteran, played all over the NBA and, you know, gave us a great interview. He's currently a cannabis advocate in Portland, and you know we got a good interview with him, and we're getting rushed out of the studio. So
he was also a part of the kind of controversial game that happened in North Korea like two years
yes,
ago. Dennis
yes.
Rodman brought a bunch of ex-NBAers, Kenny Anderson, Cliff, a few guys that I'm forgetting, and they kind of played a team of North Korean, you know, basketball players, and there was a documentary about it, which is insane that you should totally watch if you haven't seen it. But we, you know. He was a part of that. He's kind of done some interesting things. He was on Survivor. He's just a cool dude.
Yeah, he's the man. So enjoy that, and we'll be back. Peace. We're joined now by Cliff Robinson. Played in the NBA for 19 years. 18 years, excuse me. They need to edit your Wikipedia page then.
Yeah, 18.
You played with the Blazers, Suns, Pistons, Warriors, and Nets. Was the NBA's sixth man of the year in 92 and 93, was a one-time All-Star. Cliff, we really appreciate the time, sir. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you.
So, you know, we got wind of your Uncle Spliffy business venture and your advocacy for cannabis. So why don't you tell us a little bit more about it and what you got going on out in Portland these days?
Well, you know, right now... you know, since I've, you know, announced that I was getting into the cannabis business, things have been moving, you know, quite fast, you know, on this end from, you know, people trying to do collaborations or things of that sort. So, you know, right now, you know, we're just in the process of just kind of vetting out different opportunities, but we're starting a cannabis-based business, me and some partners. We're going to start with an e-commerce store where there'll be some apparel and some hemp-based products that we can sell all over. So, you know, we're going to start, you know, from that standpoint and continue to put ourselves in position to sell cannabis-based products.
All right. Now, Cliff, when you kind of first started getting the Uncle Spliffy stuff, you know, out there and getting your media kit out there and everything, what was kind of the reaction at first? Like, did you get any reaction from your ex-teammates or, you know, other guys around the league, anyone from the NBA? What was kind of the initial reaction?
Well, I mean, the initial reaction has been positive. And to tell you the truth, it kind of got out there a little sooner than I wanted it to. You know, I wanted to, you know, position things a lot better. I wanted to have the website up. I wanted to have a few different things in place before it actually got out there. So, but once I announced that I would speak at the Cannabis Collaborative Conference out here in Portland, it just kind of took off. But the reaction has all been positive. You know, you're going to have negative, but, you know, right now, at this point in the, you know, in the ball game, you know, you got to just stay focused on continuing to move forward and stay positive with what you're doing.
Right. And when I was reading an article that you did with Vice about that seminar and, you know, how everybody was coming up to you and being very receptive. Is this your first experience, you know, with the cannabis culture and living in Portland? Were you surprised at how big it is and how much how big of a response you've gotten because of your advocacy?
Well, I think, you know, the cannabis culture in itself is new because it's, you know, one out of, you know, out here in Oregon and Washington, Colorado, Alaska. You know, I think, you know, it's new because it's been behind closed doors forever. So the industry is it's new, it's exciting, and, you know, it's up to the people who are a part of the business to try to really kind of change the thought process and the culture around cannabis as a whole, because there's a lot of, you know, a lot of different benefits. And I think, you know, as a whole, you know, we need to continue to talk about the education, because a lot of knowledge has been behind closed doors that are out to the consumer to, you know, educate themselves and understand cannabis-based products as a whole.
Cliff, can you tell us a little bit about your own personal relationship with cannabis, when you got started and you know, how it affected you over your career?
You know, I got started years ago. I mean, I got started, you know, years ago. You know, it was a part of my upbringing. So, you know, for me, it's always been a part of, you know, somewhat of a part of my life on and off. You know, there was times where, you know, I couldn't partake in it because of, you know, the different rules that I had to deal with as far as basketball is concerned. But, you know, for the most part, on and off, it's been a part of my life for a long time.
So that was going to be my next question, Cliff, is how did that kind of, you know, match up with your promising basketball career? Like, were there times where, you know, because some people, it's something where it has to be an everyday thing or whatever the case may be. Like, where did that kind of match up with you versus, you know, pursuing basketball? Was it connected? Was it disconnected? How did that all work out? Like,
well,
when you're coming up?
I mean, you definitely, you know, when you're in a position where you are taking advantage of a skill or a talent, and you know, you have an opportunity to take advantage of that skill or talent, you definitely don't want to put yourself in a position where you can't, because you can't stay off of cannabis, or you can't stay off of alcohol, or you can't stay off of whatever you know, whatever the substance or you know, habit may be. So for me, it was easy to understand, well, okay, you know, this is the rules, you know, I have to try to abide by the rules, even though I did, you know, I faltered. I had, you know, a few situations where I had to, you know, they took me off the court because of cannabis use. But you know, you have to, you know, you pay your price, and you know, sometimes you get labeled as something that you shouldn't, and that's a big part of what I'm trying to do, is trying to change that stigma.
Right, and to follow up on that, in 2006, you were suspended when you were playing with the Nets. You know, based on what you just said, did you feel like, you know, you were being looked at or cast in a negative light, and maybe undeservedly so? You know, obviously, you know, you got caught making a mistake, but do you think it was Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, you know, in that situation, I felt terrible. In any situation where you let your teammates down, you're going to feel terrible. You let your organization down, you let the fans down, you're going to feel terrible. And, you know, but that's something that you have to live with. You know, for me, it was an unfortunate situation because I thought we were playing well. We were on a roll. We had just beat Indiana. So for me to get caught up in that situation was very unfortunate and something that, you know, I'll always have to live with because I did let the team down, I let the organization down, and I let the fans down. And I feel terrible for doing that.
Right. You know, I was reading the press kit your business partner sent over to me earlier, and I noticed that your marketing, the Uncle Spliffy brand is sports cannabis. When you look around, you know, the sports landscape, there's pro athletes in all sports getting in trouble, you know, for alcohol-related offenses and getting hooked on painkillers. Are you trying to push cannabis as the safer alternative and maybe trying to change the minds of front offices who are, you know, often conservative?
Well, I'm definitely trying to push it as a safe alternative to pharmaceutical and opiates and things of that sort. I'm definitely trying to push CBDs. You know, there's a lot of different research that is going on by guys a lot smarter than me who are producing different outcomes out of these plants, whether it be high CBDs, which is good for muscle relaxation and muscle recovery, they're using it for PTSD. I mean for guys coming home from the military. So, you know, there's a lot of different research going on, but I definitely think it's a safer alternative that needs to be explored.
Cliff, I just want to ask you basically straight up, you know, like, does smoking marijuana could it affect an NBA player if you're smoking consistently during a season? What kind of effect is that going to have on an NBA player, if any?
Really, I don't think it's going to have any effect other than, you know, helping them cope with a long NBA season, NFL season, whatever season it may be. I mean, you have a lot of mental and physical stress that you have to endure. So I definitely think it's, you know, something that the conversation can, you know, needs to continue to be had. So, you know, for me, you know, I'm trying to just continue the conversation and, you know, help be a part of the conversation for those guys who can't have a voice.
Do you think that cannabis is more rampant throughout the NBA than some people would realize?
You know, I'm not sure. You know, I don't play in the NBA anymore. I played in it. You know, I retired in 07. And
how about during your years?
You know, for my years, there was, you know, I can't put a number on it. But, you know, and I'm not going to sit here and try to throw other guys under the bus. But, you know, it's documented that guys, you know, used marijuana.
Did you ever, were there any instances, you know, where you felt like you had to go to great lengths to kind of hide the fact that you were using marijuana during the season?
I mean, no, not necessarily. I mean, as you know, you're not going to be disrespectful to your teammates and you know, the coaches and whoever else you may have to be around, and you know, you're not going to be going around them, you know, doing too much. So, you know, from that standpoint, no, I never really worried about it because I was always respectful of those guys.
Cliff, Jay Williams, who played with the Bulls recently, came out. He did his press run for his biography, and he spoke on the benefits of medical cannabis and for athletes. Do you think with more players starting to come out, retired players coming out and preaching about cannabis use and safe cannabis use, that it'll cause a shift in the landscape as far as how it's viewed amongst organizations and pro franchises?
You know, we'll see. You know, we'll see. I think it's, you know, it's a uphill climb, but I think the conversation is being had across the different associations and, you know, teams. They have collective bargaining agreements in place. So, you know, until the negotiations are reopened, until more states, you know, come online, you know, the retired players can voice their opinion and be a part of the cannabis landscape and space, because, you know, I'm not being paid by the NBA anymore. You know, I'm not being paid by the NBA. So for me to be out in front of it, you know, that's one thing. I'm a retired player. You know, I can voice my opinion, you know, all I want. But until current guys get out in front of this, until more states come online recreationally, you know, it'll just be a conversation. So, you know, the conversation is being had, and, you know, like I said, it's now time to continue trying to knock down that negative stigma around cannabis and athletes as a whole, and just cannabis and people as a whole, because, you know, we're using it for medical use in 30 states, and we have, you know, five with Vermont hopefully coming online recreationally. So, you know, it's an uphill climb, but the conversation is being had.
Cliff, has all of this affected your relationship with the NBA at all, whether it's the, you know, Retired Players Association or, the, you know, your official relationship with some of the teams you've played for or anything like that?
No. I mean, I don't see why. I don't see why I should. I mean, I'm trying to start a business in an exciting time where a lot of people are trying to start businesses around the cannabis space. So for me, being an ex-athlete, I really don't see a big deal about it, because at the end of the day, you know, the NBA isn't, you know, they're not giving me a paycheck. And, you know, I think the fact that I have had my issues in the league with cannabis, it may have hurt me for having opportunities when I did get out of the league. So, you know, for me, it's really about just staying focused on what I'm doing and, you know, trying to do it well, trying to stay out in front of the education, responsible use, and, you know, giving back and doing it right. So, you know, that's my focus.
Cool. Cliff, just to switch gears a little bit and talk about your playing career, if you have a few more minutes. You know, when you were in Portland in the late 80s and early 90s and playing with Clyde, you know, what was the buzz around the city like then? You know, Portland's a huge basketball town, and they love the Blazers. So, you know, was that a great experience for you to play in those teams, to make it to the finals those years?
Well, I mean, that definitely has to be one of the biggest highlights of my career, because, you know, at that time, you know, coming from UConn, the biggest thing we did, which was big at that time for us, you know, we won the NIT, and I think that kind of helped the program propel itself to where it is today. But, you know, coming into the NBA and going right to the finals and being a part of the energy here in Portland, and, you know, having the run that we did, and, you know, being able to play with the guys that I played with, I think really set me up to have the career that I had, you know, as far as the longevity, learning how to be a professional, learning how to adapt to different roles, and, you know, just learning how to be a good teammate. So, you know, for me, the energy and, you know, being a part of that team will definitely always be probably the highlight of my career.
What was it like, you know, in those finals, matching up with MJ, man, getting a firsthand look at what he could do in a final series?
Well, you know, playing against Chicago, that was definitely, you know, one we felt like, you know, probably got away because we were up 20 points in game, probably more than 20 points in game six, setting ourselves up for at least a game seven. But, you know, to play against those guys, I mean, you know, it was a highlight of my career. Everybody asked me about the shot where Michael Jordan did the shrug, but you know, it's really not a big deal. I mean, it's an iconic play. You know, it's one play out of an 18-year career, and to you know, should be part of the NBA Finals highlights for last forever. I mean, right. You know, it's not, you know, it's cool.
Cool. And then, you know, towards the end of your time in Portland, you know, they brought on some younger guys like Isaiah Ryder and Rasheed Wallace, and you played with Kenny Anderson as well. Did you start to get a sense in that last year that, you know, that where the team was heading, they started to enter, you know, what's known as the Jailblazers era now amongst the media and stuff and fans? So,
which is unfortunate.
Yeah, of course. So, you know, what was the mood around the team then in that last year you were there?
You know, it was a I thought it was going to be an exciting, you know, I was very excited about the role that I was being asked to play. Mm-hmm. You know, I was taking less shots. I had JR, who was a tremendous offensive player, Rasheed, who was, you know, he was a young player who I was excited about playing with. And Arvidas was on the team, so, you know, and Kenny Anderson. So we had some pieces that, you know, I was very excited about playing with. They just decided to go in a different direction. And when you're playing on the team for 8 years, and I had a couple issues. I sat out a year, so you know, it was probably time for a change.
Right, and you know, at Slam, Kenny Anderson is one of our favorite players in NBA history. Do you have any good Kenny stories, or, you know, what's your relationship with him like now? Do you still talk to him?
Yes, I talk to him. We stay in touch through social media and the occasional call. But
you don't post as many selfies on Twitter as he does. I know that.
I definitely don't do that. I need to get my I need to pick my tweeting game up. I've been trying, but
you should call Kenny for some tips, man. He's the man out there on social media.
He says good morning, good night every night.
Yeah,
right?
my guy.
No, but you know what? I had a great time, even though we caught a hard time for going over to North Korea. I had a great time with Kenny over there, just people watching.
Cliff, can you tell us a little bit more about that trip? I mean, it caused a lot of controversy.
It caused controversy, but we went over there to play basketball. You know, we didn't go over there to ruffle any feathers. We went over there to bring basketball to the fans who hadn't seen NBA basketball before. So, for me and the other guys, that's all we looked at it as, an opportunity to maybe open up some positive dialogue. Sports has always been a way of doing that, but we definitely didn't go over there as diplomats. So it was quite funny to just see the reaction of the guys who were there, because, I mean, who didn't know we was going to get a hard time? We went to North Korea. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Did you hit the water park with Kenny?
Pardon me?
Did you hit the water park with Kenny?
No, I watched the water park.
Cliff, when Kenny got back, he said there were a few moments where he was actually legitimately scared that he wasn't ever going to, you know, that they weren't going to let you guys out of the country. Was there ever any real fear about that?
No, I never really thought about that, to tell you the truth. I mean, that was the last thing on my mind. They were treating us too good to, you know, worry about something like that. I mean, it wasn't like they were, you know, we were traveling around under, under armed guards or anything like that. It wasn't, that was never the case. So it was never one moment where I felt unsafe or that I wasn't going to be leaving.
All right. And more importantly, out of all the guys that you went over there with, was anybody particularly out of shape or anybody that you were like, wow, this dude's been keeping in shape?
No, we were all out of shape. We were all out of shape, and it was very evident once we got out there and we seen how serious that they were taking it. So, from that standpoint, we were huffing and puffing, but we were subbing quite frequently to make sure that we were able to keep up with the pace.
Hey, Cliff, before we let you go, you know, the way the game has shifted these days, the three-point ball reigns supreme, and you hit over 1,200 threes in your career. If you were playing nowadays, how many points a game do you think you would put up?
Wow. You know what? In today's NBA, I would definitely it'd be easy out there because you can't touch anybody.
Perfect stretch four, man.
You can't touch anybody, you know. So if you can't put hands on them, I think Golden State is a prime example of, a team that's set up for today's NBA. Because when we played, we would have put hands on them.
With the amount of money they're giving you out, can you get in shape and go give a team 10 minutes a night?
Oh, trust me, I'm in shape, but I have no desire to trust it.
All right, Cliff, we really appreciate it, man. Thank you so much. And if there's anything we can do to help Uncle Spliffy or anything you're working on, please let us know.
All right, take care.